Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast. We are pleased to have with us today Jeff Steyer, who is an attorney, a senior fellow at the Consumer Choice Center, senior fellow at the Taxpayer Protection Alliance, and policy advisor at the Heartland Institute. He has testified in front of state legislatures throughout the United States and at FDA scientific hearings and at the Office of Management and Budget. Jeff, welcome.
Thanks, Stephen.
Well, thank you for being here with us. I know that in past podcast episodes, we've been following the case, the Food and Drug Administration versus Wages and White Lion Investments, LLC. Some others refer to it as Triton Distribution and Vapotasia LLC. Before we begin, what are the basic facts of the case?
So when the when Congress passed the Tobacco Control Act, it gave FDA authority to regulate tobacco products. The FDA included e-cigarettes in that mandate and set up some rules for whether they should be approved. And consistent with the legislation, FDA said that e-cigarettes have to be appropriate for the protection of public health. And that's kind of what drove all of this. And over many years, over the last decade or so, the FDA has set up rules to define whether a product gets an authorization or is denied authorization, whether it finds that it's appropriate for the protection of public health or not. It never really gave clear standards, according to Triton and according to the Fifth Circuit. It never really gave clear standards as how do you define appropriate for the protection of public health. And over time, industry has actually gone to the FDA and says, well, what studies do you want? What details do you want? How do we show this to you? The FDA did lots of rulemaking, talked about the concern, legitimate concern over youth use of e-cigarettes, but never really put out a clear standard. The most the FDA did was say it's a balancing test because, you know, Congress said appropriate for the protection of public health. That's kind of where they left it, and everything else was the FDA. And the FDA said, well, we're concerned about youth usage. We recognize how e-cigarettes may help adult smokers quit smoking. And if you quit smoking completely, that would benefit your public health, benefit the public health, benefit the individual user on a typical e-cigarette. But the way the pre-market tobacco application process works that the FDA had set up was that each individual product is going to be judged on the merits of its application, as opposed to as a category or a class of products. But you've got to show that your individual product, and when I say individual product, I mean that, the FDA means that, different flavors, different nicotine strengths, different hardware, each one, each different SKU, if you will, each different product has to have its own application and will be decided by the FDA on the merits of whether it's appropriate for the protection of public health. And in the Triton cases, which I think is really a symbol of many other cases, the company put in applications, plural applications for different products, different flavors, for instance, and the FDA, they didn't know exactly what to put in the application. But the FDA signaled to them, signaled to industry, that we're very concerned about youth usage as we weigh the benefits to public health, the upside of quitting, of adult smokers quitting, and the downside of other people, particularly youth, starting to use a nicotine product, even if it's less harmful than a cigarette. And basically, there's a scale on each side, you know, a plate on each side, and you put on the benefits of adult smokers quitting, you put on the risks of new people smoking, new people vaping, new people who might have quit, people who might have quit smoking in the past and now are not using any nicotine, and now they start using e-cigarettes. You kind of put them all on the other side of the scale and you weigh that. But the FDA made it pretty clear that it was concerned about each product's marketing plan. How are those companies going to prevent youth usage? And what the Fifth Circuit found eventually, after a few different rounds, was that the FDA told industry, we're very concerned about your marketing plans to make sure that you prevent youth usage, but in fact, didn't even read the marketing plans and may have done, as we talked about in a prior FedSoc video that we did, an animated video, that, back in, I think, 2021, is that the FDA may have instituted a de facto ban on flavored e-cigarettes and didn't even evaluate the applications. And in the Triton case, in the case that's coming before the Supreme Court now, didn't even read the marketing plan, which is why the Fifth Circuit said it was a surprise switcheroo. We wanted you to put in information about your marketing, but then at the end of the day, after the deadline for submitting your application had passed, the FDA indicated that it actually wanted longitudinal studies, long-term studies, even though that was not in the rule per se. It was just this amorphous, appropriate for the protection of public health standard, which Congress never defined, and which the FDA never defined either to industry, other than these kind of broad scopes of weighing the two sides. And that's where the FDA got into trouble. The court said they pulled a surprise switcheroo and changed the standards mid-game or perhaps at the end of the game. Talk about moving the goalpost. You wait until the game is over, and then you move the goalpost and retroactively apply it. That's what the Fifth Circuit said happened here. And that's kind of the issue that the Supreme Court is going to evaluate now that it granted cert.
And has the FDA indicated, you know, in its briefing, any response to this point that essentially ex post facto requests for longitudinal data, has there been any like explanation or reasons provided by the FDA for either not evaluating the marketing, applications at all, or this, request after the fact?
Yeah, in fact, the FDA did. And in fact, other circuits, other than the Fifth Circuit, have actually agreed with that FDA's approach. And that is essentially that it didn't really make a difference. These products wouldn't have been approved anyway. Maybe we didn't really read it, but it didn't matter if we read it or not because it didn't reach that high standard of appropriate for the protection of public health. And that's really, I'm glad you asked, because we got to the cert because there were split circuits. That was one of the many reasons we got to this point. But the FDA would say it doesn't really matter. These products are not appropriate for the protection of public health. We could have memorized their marketing plan, not only read it, but memorized it. It didn't matter. And that's why, just because we didn't give it enough weight, it doesn't matter because this product is not appropriate for the protection of public health, regardless of the marketing plan, because of the risks of youth initiation, the FDA said.
And so in the interim from the filing of this suit, until now, what's the impact been on White Lion Investments LLC with regards to the business they're in of manufacturing and distributing e-liquids?
Well, they can't legally sell their product. Now, what happened up until the Fifth Circuit overruled the FDA, but it's not just this one, I don't want to say small, but medium-sized company. It's the entire industry that is facing this challenge. And I would say from a public health perspective, it's not only the industry, it's cigarette smokers who are looking for a way to quit smoking and a lower risk way of getting their nicotine through e-cigarettes. And in a recent FDA oversight hearing, Chairman Comer cited his concern not only about the kind of regulatory mess and legal mess that we're in, but there is almost a bipartisan recognition that there are e-cigarettes that are not legal that are coming in from China. And well, of course, because people want to quit smoking, they have to get their product somewhere. And that's where they're finding their way. It's become a little bit of a hackneyed scare. But the relevant point, I think, as a result of the litigation and everything that led up to it, is that Congress intended for there to be a regulated marketplace. Now, e-cigarettes hadn't even been developed and come to market when Congress wrote this law, but there is an angle where FDA may have appropriately come in to regulate them through these deeming regulations, where they deemed e-cigarettes to be tobacco products because the nicotine was derived from tobacco. Maybe a little bit of a stretch, but that hasn't been the issue. The issue is not standing up a regulated marketplace of lower risk products. And as we have unfortunately learned for a long time, prohibition doesn't always work. And especially when it comes to a potentially life-saving product for an individual smoker, they're going to find a way to get that product. Shortly before COVID, there was a big issue called E-Valley, which was called the e-cigarette vaping associated lung injury. And people, especially young people, were getting injuries to their lung from vaping. But they weren't vaping nicotine e-cigarettes. They were vaping illicit THC hash oil. And what we learned early on in that situation was it was coming from vitamin E acetate that was being added to the oil, to the hash oil, to cut it, to be able to, you know, in this illegal marketplace of hash oil, bad actors were just cutting the product and selling it with an oil in it. The problem is vitamin E acetate oil, you know, it's a vitamin. How bad could that be? Well, it's an inhalational toxicant. You should never inhale it. But these young people who were making illicit products put that in there. Now, the reason I bring this up, it had nothing to do with nicotine, of course, because nicotine liquids in an e-cigarette are water-based. And as anyone who has ever tried to make salad dressing knows, water and oil don't mix. So obviously, the vitamin E acetate oil that caused these lung injuries was coming not from a nicotine product, but from a hash oil product. But the problem is, when you have an unregulated marketplace, when you have products that are coming in from China, as Chairman Comer said, that haven't gone through a regulatory process, while the products coming in from China, the e-cigarettes today are largely safe, largely tremendously safer than cigarettes, the problem is they're not being regulated because we have a black market. It's the only market we have right now because the FDA hasn't authorized any products that adult smokers want. Up until, by the way, a few weeks ago when the FDA was under pressure, as the Supreme Court was considering cert here, they did authorize a few menthol e-cigarettes. But menthol is kind of a separate category of flavors because we have tobacco-flavored cigarettes. So the FDA has authorized some tobacco-flavored e-cigarettes. They hadn't authorized any menthol e-cigarettes up until recently. But this de facto ban is still relevant because all other flavors other than tobacco and menthol have not been authorized by the FDA. And that's why we've got this unregulated marketplace, which is in fact, as I think if we learn a lesson from E-Valley, is that when you have products that people demand and you force them off of the legal market into an unregulated market, then you do run the risk of contaminated products. You run the risks of dangers. Whereas if we have set up what Congress envisioned, which was a regulated marketplace where those products have to be authorized by the FDA, then the products coming in to meet the demand of smokers who want to quit smoking will go through the regulatory process and be recognized as not having those contaminants in them. And that's kind of the danger that we're in right now. And that's a result of the FDA's lack of clarity and lack of willingness to authorize flavored e-cigarettes. And that's really the danger that we're in now. I think a large part of why the FDA has stepped, why the Supreme Court has stepped in this case.
And has the FDA explained its rationale for approving tobacco flavored, e-cigarette flavors, as well as, you know, menthol flavors, vis-a-vis other flavors, such as, let's say, like fruit-based or bubblegum-based or things of that nature?
Almost exclusively, the FDA has relied on the argument that kids prefer flavors. Kids prefer menthol. Kids don't really like tobacco flavor. And that's kind of what's driving almost all of this. There have been some other cases, but it's almost entirely concern over youth vaping. But we've learned some interesting things that adult smokers think they like tobacco flavor. But when they begin their journey of quitting smoking, one of the first benefits of quitting smoking and using an e-cigarette is that your sense of taste comes back. And many adult smokers have reported that when they switch, they get their sense of taste back. They learn that they actually don't like the flavor of burnt tobacco, and they like sweet flavors. I recall being in a meeting with the OMB during the deeming regulation period when the FDA was putting into place these rules about it deeming e-cigarettes to be a tobacco product. And there was a big issue even back then over the issue of flavors other than tobacco and menthol. And it seemed at the time that the FDA was going to, in the regulatory process, and this is critical to this case, in the regulatory process, the FDA was going to include in the deeming rule that you can't have a flavored e-cigarette other than tobacco and menthol flavor. That rule, this was going back all the way to the Obama administration. That aspect of the rule never made it into the final rule. And for our listeners who have never had the pleasure of meeting with OMB as they were considering a major rule, they don't tell you anything about what's in the rule. There's a proposed rule, which you can see. There's a notice and comment period. But then the FDA finalizes their rule and hands it over to the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs at OMB. And then there's an opportunity to go meet with OMB about the rule. But the FDA hasn't published that final rule yet. It's kind of in limbo. So I had the opportunity to read the proposed rule, as did everyone else. But the OIRA was evaluating the final rule, the almost final rule. They were about to finalize the final rule, and you don't get to see what's in that final rule, and certainly OMB doesn't tell you what's in that. So I had to go in there and kind of guess that maybe there's going to be a ban on flavors and make the case as to why I thought flavors were critical, why smokers think flavors are critical. But the interesting thing is, when I mentioned to OIRA that adults like watermelon flavor, one of the members of the panel said, "Oh, I love watermelon." And that was an adult member of the panel. So adults like flavors. Kids also like flavors. And the FDA has focused on kids liking flavors at the harm of adult smokers who also like flavors, and they get their sense of taste back. And they decide, you know what, I don't like tobacco flavor. I thought I liked tobacco flavor because I liked how I felt when I consumed the nicotine, but it wasn't the tobacco flavor I liked. And now that I can actually taste things again, I much prefer watermelon flavor to help me maintain my cessation of smoking.
And so recently, we're recording this in July 2024, the U.S. Supreme Court overruled the Chevron doctrine in the case of Loper Bright versus Raimondo. Do you think that, and this clearly, you know, is unknown, but do you think that the overruling of Chevron could potentially have any role in the court's posture in to this case?
Well, first of all, congratulations. I think we won the over-under on how long we can go without mentioning Chevron.
That's right.
But it's an important question. I think it'll be important in so many different areas, as we know. It hasn't been litigated because we were all operating in a Chevron world. And the deeming regulation, did it go too far, right? Under Chevron, there was no question that the FDA could make up some sort of interpretation of what Congress intended for them to do. And one of the areas where I think there's been a lot of misunderstanding, or perhaps intentional, by those who oppose the end of Chevron, is that the courts are now going to give their own expertise. That's certainly not what happened. It's only about statutory interpretation. And The problem is that we've been living in a world, and Congress has been living in a world, where they can have vague statutes and the regulators decide. Now that equation has changed, and Congress is going to have to give a lot more specific delegation of powers to the agency, or have it be interpreted by the courts. And I think while so many people said Chevron is a shift of power to the courts, I think it's relevant here that it's really a message back to Congress that you've got to tell regulators what you want them to do and be more specific about it. So in this case, as I alluded to earlier, the appropriate for the protection of public health standard is really vague. And the agency only made it more vague by not setting out standards. But I don't know if that would fall under Chevron, really, because at least if I were interpreting the statute as a judge, I would say, well, you made a pretty broad delegation of authority. Now, was the deeming rule that gave the FDA authority, that the FDA gave itself authority over e-cigarettes, that becomes a little bit more in the realm of Chevron. And certainly to support the Fifth Circuit's concern about whether, in fact, there was a de facto ban on flavors, that becomes an issue because Congress really left it open. And now you don't need the end of Chevron. You don't need Loper to say, as the Fifth Circuit did, is that the FDA was arbitrary and capricious and pulled a surprise switcheroo by changing the rules at the end of the game. That doesn't require Chevron to be concerned about what FDA did here. Many who are saying that the FDA did the wrong thing by having a de facto flavor ban kind of concern me. I don't think supporters of e-cigarettes and those that are concerned that the FDA went too far here should hang their hat on this de facto flavor ban rule, because at the end of the day, the FDA could say, it wasn't a de facto flavor ban. We've evaluated each application and none of them have passed, none of the flavored products other than menthol have passed our test yet. It's a high standard. And Juul has submitted an application to the FDA, a pre-market tobacco application, for an e-cigarette that has some sort of hardware built into it. We don't know what it is, but I would imagine it's like a thumbprint. And when you buy the product, you have to show your driver's license to make sure you're over 21. And then you initialize the product with your thumbprint, and you can only use that product with your thumbprint. That's my kind of speculation as to what this technology is. The pre-market tobacco application is not a public document. And let's just say that the FDA says, well, we've already granted authorization to some menthol e-cigarettes that don't have this technology. So we're going to grant authorization to a different e-cigarette that has this technology, because certainly it's done a lot to prevent youth usage. And after that product is authorized and there's no big uptick in youth usage of that product, then you might see Juul come back with an application for that technology in a cherry flavored or watermelon or sweet flavor. They're not going to say gummy bear. They're not going to have some marketing that appeals to kids, but a sweet flavor that appeals to adults that has this protection. And I think the FDA would be wise to argue that when that technology comes forward, we're going to authorize the product, which says there was no de facto flavor ban. We just haven't gotten a good application yet. So I would warn people not to hang your hat on the argument that there was a de facto flavor ban, but instead say the FDA didn't give clear standards as to what has to happen. That's not a Chevron issue. It's just a standard administrative law approach, is where you have to give notice and comment, and you didn't tell the public, you didn't tell the regulated industry what the standard is. And if you didn't tell the industry what the standard is, then that's not a fair rulemaking. And that's, you know, the Fifth Circuit said that this was arbitrary and capricious because of that.
And any final thoughts?
Well, this is a big issue for public health. This is also a big issue because it's going to be one of the first cases in that post-Chevron world. And the ramifications, I think, will be quite significant, not only for public health, but I think the ramifications, even before this case is adjudicated, a little under a year from now, that the agency's that the FDA itself and other agencies have to recognize that not only post-Chevron, but in this Triton era, that we're going to have to be very clear with regulated industries about what we mean, and we can't change the rules along the way. The FDA is in a lot of pain right now because of the mess that it got itself into. And I think agencies are already going to have to be wise before this comes out and say, we better be a lot more clear, or we're going to have a lot of litigation, a lot of uncertainty in the regulated community. And we owe it to the public to be a little bit more specific when we, not only when we create rules, but when we don't create rules and we make adjudications and regulatory judgments. We're living in a different world now, not only post-Chevron, but I think because the court is taking up this Triton case.
Well, Jeff Sawyer, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your time today. And we'll keep an eye on this case, FDA versus Wages and White Lion Investments, LLC, also commonly referenced as Triton or Vaptasia. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Stephen.
On behalf of the Federal Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.